Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, June 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Today's program is very timely indeed. It's all about pairing food and drink. Wine expert Bill Johnston is joined by food aficionado Peter Blackman. So if you're wondering what wine goes best with a nice juicy steak, maybe you're looking for a tasty drink to wash down a pasta dish, this is the program for you. And I'll bet you have some questions. I have a lot of questions. And now's the time to get your question in. Much more important than mine. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. Yeah, food and wine and the pairings thereof, coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The focus of today's program is how to pair food and drink. And in the studio to help us determine the best matches are Bill Johnston and Peter Blackman. Bill is a certified wine expert with more than 20 years of industry experience. He is now a fine wine importer with Tri-Vin Imports serving the Capital Region. Peter has spent roughly 3 decades in the restaurant business. He is the proprietor of Veronica's Culinary Tavern in Altamont, New York. If you have a question, get in line now, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. I have a question. I have a suspicion that this will be a very popular program. So best to call early, 800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. My producer, Jim Lavoulis, is out, in full disclosure. I'll be checking the email myself. So that means it's maybe a 50% chance that I will actually see it, but I'll give it a shot. In the meantime, Bill and Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You have done an amazing thing here. I invite every listener to go to our website, wamc.org, and click on the live video feed just to see what you have brought. It's very pleasing to the eye. It smells great. And I wonder, Bill, maybe you could explain what this experiment is all about today.
Well, I like to talk about how I first was introduced to wine by my first landlady from Paris. I was fortunate. She taught me to think in terms of the regional character of wine.
Okay.
Which is counterintuitive. Here in this country, we're a Coke and Pepsi nation, as you know. So everyone thinks in terms of brand or winery. And I like to teach people to redirect their thinking. The next thing they normally go to is grape. Okay, I like a Merlot. Well, you know, Merlot can be completely different from the right bank of Bordeaux as opposed to in California. So that's not really the best way to go either. I tell people to think in terms of the region, think regionally, and it puts you way ahead of the game.
Why?
Because the personality of the wine is greatly affected if it's a traditional wine made in the regional character.
By the climate and the soil, they call that terroir?
The terroir is more the personality. There is climate and soil influence, of course, but a winemaker can work around that and make a different style in that area. It's more everything, the history, the traditions, the winemaking, and of course, the soils and the microclimate, as you so accurately mentioned.
Mm. Our guest today, well, we have two guests today. We have Bill Johnston, who will deal with the wine, and we have Peter Blackman, who will deal with the food. And so part of this experiment will be pairing food, and I'm supposed to use my discerning palate. Because if so, you're going to be really disappointed.
Well, you have the most important aspect of a palate, which is you know what you like.
Well, that's true. That's true. I must say, of all the things I know very little about, wine is very near the top of the list. So this will be an education for me as well. How do you want to get started here?
Well, Peter, why don't you talk a little bit about how you came up with the wines to pair and this beautiful menu that you have come up with, which our meeting, when we did that, it was an inspiration to me, and I was very excited after that meeting.
All right, stand by. Let me give you the number one more time, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, and those on the line, just hang in there. We'll set up the program, and then we'll get to the calls. All right, I apologize for interrupting, Peter. Go ahead.
No problem at all. Well, thanks again for having us. I mean, basically, when Bill came to me on this, and we worked on the menu, I just kind of grabbed some of my favorite things on the menu that I think really work well with enjoying wine, starting with our antipasto picnic. kind of centered with our homemade edamame hummus, which has some truffle lace into it as well. So, you know, kind of on this platter is a myriad of some fantastic foods that will pair with kind of any wine that you you know, you desire to be drinking, whether it be a big red or, you know, a light Prosecco or whatever it may be, which is why it's a great way to start when you're going out for dinner. You know, a lot of times you'll have a variety of wines on the table that the guests want to drink. Everybody can find something here that they're happy with.
And of course, you need to know how to pair it. And so what's the what is the most basic thing one of us who may be ignorant, one of us in this room who may be ignorant about wine, can do if he goes to a restaurant and wants to pair a wine with a food?
Well, you know, they're the traditional pairings, which, of course, everyone knows, hearty reds with meat and whites with fish and chicken. But there is a new trend going on, which I like to call the beverage trend. And that is, in other words, discover wines that speak to you and then drink those wines no matter what food you're eating.
Really?
And it's all going to be, everything is fine.
Isn't that heresy?
No.
No?
There
okay.
are no mistakes in wine. It's all just happy.
Oh, I've made a few mistakes with wine, let me tell you. All right, so let's try some wine. Let's try some food. And in the meantime, while you're pouring, let's take a call. 800-348-2551, the number. We are joined today by Bill Johnston and Peter Blackman. Wine and food pairing today. Let's go to Cynthia in Plattekill. Cynthia, you're on.
Hi. Hope you guys are doing well.
So far, so
I
good.
I have a question about, thank you. I have a question about red wine. Three quick questions.
Okay.
Do you really need to decant it? What does decanting do? And if you're only going to have a glass or two at home out of your bottle, what then?
You know, those are absolutely fantastic questions. I want to thank you, Cynthia. That's a great question, and everybody's going to benefit from this, I believe. Decanting of wine is better for the traditional wines. We're talking about the Tuscan big reserve wines, the Bordeaux's of the world, the northern Burgundies that are very tannic, they're very acidic, they're very strong, and they need to come together. They're really cellar selections, and the way to think about decanting is cellaring a wine is like using a scalpel, and very accurate. Decanting a wine is a meat axe. So what you want to do is decant for a relatively short period of time, 3 hours or so, even with a monster red.
When you say decant, I always thought decant was you pour it into a glass. Now, you're talking about something else here.
You can decant in a glass, but normally it's done in anything, a pitcher. You can use a decanting vessel, but it's not necessary.
Really?
Yes.
There you go, Cynthia.
And then what was the second part of your question? I'm sorry.
As far as only having one glass of wine.
Oh,
what do you do if you're just opening a bottle for yourself and you're just having glass?
If it's a traditional red, one of those big old world styled reds, then it will evolve naturally with the top put back in and will progress over the next 3, 4, 5, 6, even 7 days, 8 days and get better and better and better. However, if it is something that is a lighter wine or a new world styled red, then what you're going to want to do is preserve it in some way. And honestly, my favorite is you put it in a Ziploc baggie and you stick it in the freezer. You just have to remember to take it out the morning that you're going to drink it, set it on your kitchen counter, and when you come home from work, it'll be ready to go.
Hold it.
So you leave it in the bottle and you put the bottle in a Ziploc baggie.
No. You pour the wine.
No, you pour the whole
Ziploc baggie.
Oh, freeze hold it, Cynthia. You freeze the wine?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, now wait a minute. You guys are pulling my leg here.
No.
Really? And the wine is okay?
Yes.
Well, you learn something new every day. Cynthia, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551, the number on this Food Friday. Peter Blackman and Bill Johnston with us. What are we drinking here?
This is a Rioja Rosé from the north of Spain. It's a very, very old region. It's been in existence growing grapes since the Roman days, but it was standardized in 1560, and it's heavily influenced by the Basque people to the north, so they make big, hearty wines, and rosés, you know, are not necessarily sweet or low in flavor, as many people mistakenly think.
This is definitely not that.
Right.
This is quite delicious.
Oh, thank you, Ray. I'm glad you like.
Oh, very nice. 800-348-2551, the number. And Peter, what are you doing?
I'm giving you a little of our edamame hummus and a little bit of our homemade apricot jam. I think two of these will work out really well. I would break the crostini in half.
Okay.
But I think start with the apricot, I think, is probably the better way to start with that.
All right. I better put my pen down. Let's take a call while I try to break this bread here. Elliot in Lenox. Elliot, you're on.
Hi. Great subject. I have a complaint, and I want to see what your two experts think about it. I've been to a number of these wine tastings that restaurants have with vintners, and they always serve courses with a single wine. What I would like to do, because I think our taste preferences are all different, is get all the wines that they want us to buy, maybe five of them for each course, and let me taste each one per course rather than have to be told what wine goes with what in order, and that's the way they normally do it. I wonder what your guys thought about that.
It's a fabulous idea. At the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, they offer those flights. It's called a flight of wine at the new restaurant, their Italian restaurant, the Caterina de' Medici. And so it's been done, and it is available. So go to your local restaurant and tell them what your idea, and they should be able to put something together for you.
I mean, we definitely wouldn't have a problem doing that. And I think it's nice to do something like that when you have two couples or something like that and you just want to have a wine evening. You could, you know, start off with a couple of whites with the first course and typically a lighter course and work your way towards, a larger red as long as, you don't mind sharing glasses. And I think you order four glasses per course and you just kind of you find out what you like. And again, kind of as Bill has said, you know, wine shouldn't be intimidating. It needs to be fun. And, that's why it's part of the reason why we drink wine is to enjoy and have fun. So don't take it too seriously. Enjoy it.
Elliot, thank you for the call. We'll take a break here on this Food Friday. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Peter Blackman and Bill Johnston are here, and we take your questions about food and wine pairing on the way.
Support for WMT comes from Kern Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota, providing DOL fiduciary rule compliance training and guidance to life insurance carriers and their distribution partners. KernCompliance.com. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moo Dairy Free, handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts. A food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery. rivervalley.coop. Big Elm Brewing at 65 Silver Street in Sheffield, Massachusetts. Tap room open Thursdays through Saturdays, 12 to 6 p.m. BigElmBrewing.com. And Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com.
Food and wine pairing on our Food Friday today. Bill Johnston is here and Peter Blackman. Bill is a certified wine expert with more than 20 years of industry experience. He is now a fine wine importer with Tri-Vin Imports serving the Capital Region. Peter is the proprietor of Veronica's Culinary Tavern in Altamont, New York. How are things down at Veronica's?
We're doing well. We're really trying to rebrand in the community. It's a wonderful community out past Indian Ladder Farms, just below Thatcher Park.
Oh, perfect spot. Nice.
Great spot to be. So it's a wonderful community. Great little drive from Albany.
Now, your chef made the hummus?
He does.
Yep. Fantastic stuff. What's in it?
Well, Alex takes white beans and edamame and purees them down and then slowly laces in a couple of his secret seasonings and a little lace of truffle oil.
Really
so
tasty.
Just does a great job.
And a beautiful color, too.
Yeah, really it's nice. A nice bright green.
All right, our second wine here today, Bill Johnston, is what?
This is a Vino Verde, and we're coming into summer, so a light, refreshing, very low alcohol, reasonably priced wine like this is perfect. this is something that you could have on its own. You can throw it over ice. You can mix it with things. It's just, you know, this is the ultimate casual, everyday, you don't have to think about it, have fun wine.
I love it. Now, what is the alcohol content on that?
9%.
Oh, so that is very a light low. Wine. Yeah, very it's low. Very nice. And that would go well with what, Peter?
I think this goes really nice with our baby kale salad. It's a baby kale salad that has artichokes, roasted red peppers, a little Havarti cheese, which nice. Adds a nice creaminess to it, and Alex's homemade Parmesan peppercorn dressing. Then we take some walnuts and douse them in Red Hot, which everybody's pretty much familiar with, and then we dry them overnight.
I'm sorry, you put the walnuts into Red Hot?
Into Red Hot sauce.
It genius!
It adds a great little kick to it. The red baby kale just got delivered from Fox Creek Farms yesterday morning. So we really like to use the local purveyors whenever possible.
Is kale quite popular in Altamont?
It's amazing. I mean, I started the butcher block and we used to garnish the salad bar with it, but it's the varieties are great and they've really just come a long way. And I think if you put a nice salad together, it's really nice and fresh. I'm amazed to say that I enjoy it.
May I say that you might be the first person who ever brought a salad to Food Friday. So what? It'll be tricky. It'll be a logistical, interesting moment for me to actually eat this and do a show. So let's take another call. I'll turn my mic off, and I'll chomp some kale, which, again, the second time in my life.
Hey, it's got Red Hot walnuts on it. That always makes it better.
Fair enough. Let's go over to Joe in Chester. Joe, you're on.
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Good.
I'm making a special dinner for my wife, and I'm going to barbecue a hell of a steak. And I'd like to know some ideas on how to prepare it and also what wine to serve it with.
Peter, you want to talk about preparing that halibut?
I think, I think halibut's such a beautiful light fish. We have a tile fish that we prepare on our menu, and you want to keep the flavor of the fish, and the texture really to be the focus of it. So, you know, keep it something nice and light. We've got just some wonderful herbs, and olive oil, I think, is a really nice way to do it. A trick that I've used over the years to make sure that it stays nice and moist is you can take some mayonnaise and, you know, lace that with some fresh herbs, and you can spread that over the top, and it really makes sure that you don't burn the fish. It also makes it easier to fish to flip when you're on the grill. So that's a nice little shortcut that I think works out pretty well. I'll let Bill take care of the wine.
For wine on that dish, you are wide open. I mean, you really can't go wrong. I would go with whatever it is that you prefer. You can have a dry rosé, you can have a crisp white, you could have a chardonnay, you could have a light red, even a big red, who cares, why not? But ideal pairings would be like a lighter red or a white.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Hope you have a wonderful dinner.
Bill, I gotta say, I'm quite partial to this. This is really, really good, this Vino Verde, really nice.
Well, this particular Vino Verde was introduced in 1939, one of the first ones that was released for national sale. And it's really interesting because this label is a Japanese stamp that was actually
made. Well,
that
doesn't make any sense for a Portuguese wine.
Yeah, it was so popular in Japan that they came out with a commemorative stamp for
the
winery.
Oh, that's terrific.
And so they've been using the label ever since.
And it goes very well with the kale salad. Very nice.
First time for everything.
Second time for kale for me. But I got to say, the walnuts and Red Hot, amazing. Amazing. What a great idea. You came up with that?
Alex and I came up with it.
Very nice. Late at night, I'm guessing, after a couple of glasses of wine.
No. We do our best work before the shift.
Well, how about that?
Right, then we sleep on it.
Let's go over to Jem in Northfield, Mass. You're on.
Yeah, hello. Right. My question has to do with the old rule of thumb was red wine with red meat, white wine with fish. Does that still hold? And another question related is what goes with blush or what goes with the in-between?
Very good. Of course, the traditions are exactly what, is probably your very best pairing. There's no doubt about it. You're going to get a very pleasant experience if you stick to the old rule of thumb. But I'm just saying, you know, you don't have to be afraid to venture from that. And as far as you're mentioning a blush, I'd like to congratulate you for understanding that a rosé is much different than a blush. It's not that common.
For those who don't know, explain. Right.
A rosé is dry and a blush is off dry or can be even very sweet.
All right.
So when you're going with a sweet wine, now you have, you know, something that's pretty tricky to do a good food pairing. So it's actually an excellent question. And I recommend spicy Asian.
Brilliant.
Great.
Well, thanks for the call. It was fantastic.
Thanks very much.
Well done.
800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is our number. We're joined today by Peter Blackman, the proprietor of Veronica's Culinary Tavern in Altamont, New York. Also, Bill Johnston, who is a wine importer with Tri-Vin Imports. Bill, you obviously have a passion for this. How did this begin?
Well, what happened was I was from Indiana, from a cornfield.
Ah.
And my first landlady, who was from Paris, I brought over an ignorant gift of a poor wine.
Oh, ouch.
Insulted her sensibility, so she waited a reasonable amount of time, invited me to a beautiful bistro in the University Village, and introduced me to fine wine.
And from then on?
Well, from there, I just learned on my own. She got me started in the right direction by showing me the regions, right bank, left bank of Bordeaux, and so forth, because obviously the French understand that regional character better than almost anyone else in the world. And then I studied on my own until the industry that I was in, you know, sort of went south after the NAFTA signing. And then I was encouraged by my family to follow my passion, and I went for my certification with the Court of Master Sommeliers. At that time, there was no course of study. I had to study on my own.
And that required drinking a lot of wine.
Well, no, of course the drinking of the wine was, you know, the first part when I was enjoying myself and all that. But once I got serious with it, it's a lot of reading and it's studying, and you know, that's it's less drinking. Actually, most professionals spit.
Now, really?
Yeah.
I'll be darned. There are many hilarious jokes there that, and none of them I will do here on the program. In your 20 years, have Americans become, in general now, I'm generalizing, more sophisticated about their knowledge of wine?
Oh, absolutely, no question. It's amazing how far we've come as a nation. 2007 was the first year that wine became the best-selling alcoholic beverage in America, besting beer, and it will never go back.
When did that happen?
2007, and it's continuing to increase.
Even with the microbrew revolution and local beers?
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, how about you, Peter, at the shop in Altamont, at Veronica's? What's the most popular, not brand, but what's the most popular wine that you guys serve?
Well, I mean, it's all across the board. I mean, again, as Bill's kind of said, people say I like a Merlot, and it's across the board. I think you're seeing a lot of growth in rosé. I think that's really in the past.
That seems very old school to me, like something my folks would have had.
Yeah, but again, it's coming back. I mean, I think that it's your red wine drinkers enjoy it in the summer because it's crisp, it's refreshing. It still tends to have a dry finish. Obviously, your white wine drinkers, it's a little bigger than like a Pinot Grigio or something like that. But I think, you know, I mean, to kind of go back to what you said about people being better educated over the years, I think the same is completely true in the food industry. I mean, if you were to go back 10 years ago, there was no food channel or anything like that, or
right.
It was just beginning. And people are really inquisitive, which really makes our industry much more exciting and engaging, because it really challenges us to, you know, take something that's traditional and, you know, kind of what we like to do is flip it on its head a little bit, you know, give it a different spin and, you know, try to inspire people that, you know, something they would try at home, like the halibut call or something along those lines. It's like, you know, come out to have something to eat and have a great dining experience. But, you know, can I go home and maybe try to recreate this or have some fun with my friends and, you know, become a rock star at home?
Very interesting point you make about turning things over on their heads, because, Bill, it seems to me that with education, with a more educated public and consumer of wine, it would be very conventional thinking. But your philosophy is think outside the box.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And your comment is very timely because we're now starting our first red, and the theme of our reds is
more wine.
new world styled wines from the old world. So at the beginning of the program, I mentioned thinking in terms of regional character. So this is 180 degrees the opposite. It's thinking of wines that do not characterize the region they come
from. So what, this is a French wine in the style of Long Island? What are we talking about
exactly.
here? Exactly. Oh, amazing. All right. Well, interesting.
This is a wine made in the style of Napa or Sonoma red from California, but it's actually from the south of Spain, a region called Umilla, which had the distinct advantage of escaping the phylloxera epidemic of the late 1800s wiped out most of Europe. And then it has the further advantage of having a very low nutrient soil, continental microclimate, some Mediterranean influence. They're 50 to 60 miles inland, so it's just the right amount of influence that they can emulate New World style wines very easily.
Now, why would they want to, is my question.
You know, that's a great question, and I'll tell you exactly why. It all comes down to money. Today, if you want a New World style wine made at a very high level of quality from Napa or Sonoma, you're going to have to break out quite a few of those precious dollars. These wines are at a dramatic fraction of the actual California price.
You're kidding me.
No.
So an import is less expensive than a quality domestic?
It's all supply and demand. That's correct. Because since people know the quality and the style from Napa and Sonoma, they automatically go there. And when a winery becomes a superstar within that region, their price is going to dramatically climb with the demand. So it's not so much a cost benefit problem. It's more supply and demand. There's only so much of it.
Yeah.
If you want it and there isn't enough of it, you're going to have to pay. So the demand is much lower in these regions that aren't as well known and as superstar famous as Napa.
This is an interesting wine. It's a nice rounded wine. I don't know much about wine, but would you be able to say, oh yeah, this is the imported version of the California wine? If you had them backed, if you were blindfolded, could you tell the difference?
Another excellent question. That's where it really, you know, once it becomes blindfold New World, that, you know, then it makes my list as, wow, this is really special.
Yeah.
This is blindfold.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a call here. And by the way, what did I just eat, Peter? That's amazing.
Those are our Mio chips. They're house-made kettle chips with Alex's homemade bolognese sauce, a little smoked mozzarella, red pepper Asiago.
So good.
And then some pepperdews, which are a mildly hot sweet pepper on top.
It goes so well with the wine. Let's go back to the phones here. 800-348-2551. Jill in Waterford. Jill, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I almost lost you because I was getting a low battery signal.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, go ahead.
I was hoping I could stay until you picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I tuned in a little bit late, and as I tuned in, you were in the middle of saying that you could put red wine in a baggie in the freezer.
Yeah, that freaked me out.
Got everybody's attention.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, you better explain it again, Bill.
How long after, first of all, I'm trying to wrap my brain around putting red wine in a freezer.
Yeah, me too.
As long as you double bag it, it's not going to get frostbitten. And
it's not going to get what?
Frostbitten. And, you know, that taste that you get if you leave a food that's unprotected in a freezer, it gets that freezery sort of a taste. It doesn't get that if you double bag it. And it's going to remain.
So there's enough alcohol in it to keep it from freezing?
No, it freezes.
It freezes.
Oh, yeah.
Will it separate?
No, not at all. Now, keep in mind that the alternative, if you leave it on the counter, even if you put the argon treatment or pump out the air, eventually oxygen is going to take over and do its job and turn the wine into acetic acid, which is vinegar.
Right.
So this is not the same as a fresh wine, just like freezing a food is not the same, but it's much better than vinegar. The two things that I have noticed closely examining the wine is You can very, very slightly notice the bag, especially on a lighter wine, the plastic taste. Number two, you get a little something missing in the mid-palate. When you talk about mid-palate, you're talking about, you know, the entry, the mid-palate, and the finish is the wine in your mouth over time. And right in the mid-palate, which is the tricky part anyway, there's going to be a little hole there. But other than that, it's very minor. Certainly better than a vinegar.
Well, there you go.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want one more question. How long will it take the wine to come to room temperature? Because I know it's not etched in stone anymore.
That's one for the science forum.
I do not like cold red wine.
8 to 10 hours.
All right.
You put it on the counter in the morning before you go to work, and when you come back at dinner time, it's ready.
All right. Jill, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. We go to Roy in Albany. Roy.
Hi there. Hi. I am personally very interested in non-grape wines, specifically mead, but there's also fruits like pear and apple. And I was wondering if you gentlemen wanted to discuss them at all, to see if you recommended them, you felt strongly about them. What are your thoughts on them?
Well, I think you can probably tell that, you know, I'm not a real, a bad mouther of any type of wine. But meads are fantastic. They've been around. It's one of the oldest style of wines. They're fantastic. And there's a couple of guys out in the Finger Lakes who blend them with fruit wines as well to make them even more interesting. But without a doubt, my favorite of all those styles is the black raspberry wine, which is unbelievably delicious and complex. And ironically, it's about 10 times more expensive to produce than grape wine.
I'll be darned. We have to take a break here in a moment. Well, let's do it now, Zach. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. 800-348-2551. Bill Johnston and Peter Blackman are here. We talk wine and food pairings. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, located in the Old Town Hall, Sunderland, Massachusetts. Open Tuesday through Sunday at 5, featuring outdoor dining on the patio and front porch throughout the summer. BlueHeronDining.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Now crafting black garlic and black garlic products in small batches. BlackGarlicSeaSalt.com for more information. SPAC, welcoming the New York City Ballet to their summer home for 2 weeks, July 5th to the 15th. SPAC.org for tickets and information. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And Stammel Stringed Instruments, downtown Amherst and Poughkeepsie, providing sales, service, and rentals of violins, violas, cellos, and bows, restorations and appraisals, open Tuesday through Saturday, stammelstring.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Food Friday, Ray Graff here. Today we talk food and wine pairings with Bill Johnston and Peter Blackman. Bill is a wine importer with Tri-Vin Imports, and Peter is the proprietor of Veronica's Culinary Tavern in Altamont, New York. And our phone number here is 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. And this is an email that came in during the break. This is from someone named Alan, not our Alan, a different Alan. And the subject heading is Bull's Blood Wine. Years ago, I had a wine which matched perfectly with beef. Have not seen it since. It was called Bull's Blood. Is it still available?
Absolutely. Egri Bekaver Bull's Blood is an obscure traditional wine, and it is still available. It's Hungarian, and it's not very expensive, but it's somewhat gone out of fashion. It was much more popular
Why?
In the early days when the more traditional wines were just about all you had.
Right.
Now that you have the New World style, the big open, as you mentioned, open fleshy style,
mm-hmm.
that style is taking over the lion's share of the middle market.
I see. All right. Well, thank you for that email. We appreciate it, Alan. This is an interesting wine.
Yeah.
This is it tastes fairly light to me. It's a Chardonnay, yeah?
Yes. This has been aged in an oak barrel, and that gives it that little creaminess.
Yeah.
And what happens when you age wine in an oak barrel is a process called malolactic fermentation, which is a fancy way of saying that the very crisp part and tart part of the white wine is actually consumed by a bacteria, and then what is excreted is lactic acid, which we're familiar with from milk.
So it's a buttery, gives it that buttery taste.
Exactly.
Oh, fascinating. And what is the brand? What is this?
This is Paris Valley Road, and they're a tiny little producer. They have one single vineyard called the Chalk Knoll, and they're just one click outside of a fairly famous region called Paso Robles, but they're actually in the Lucas Valley, and which is less well known, and so you are able to benefit from a less expensive, you know, obviously that Paso cachet is going to drive the price up. So even though it's a family-owned small vintage wine, it's really reasonably priced too.
So this is a nice Chardonnay. Traditional thinking would be I'd have this with fish or something, but Bill Johnston would probably say, well, you have this with a nice sirloin steak.
I wouldn't mind it. You know, a Chardonnay drinker is a Chardonnay drinker. If you like a buttery Chard, you're going to want that no matter what. And that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Well, what would you eat with this?
Well, anything you want.
I mean, okay, helping me. All right, I'll have it with a Big Mac then.
But
all right?
I think that's kind of what we're trying to say today is drink what you like and eat what you enjoy as well. And I think that they'll go together. There is a school of thought on things, but, you know, If you like Chardonnay, it doesn't mean that you have to have a big Cabernet with a steak because you're not going to enjoy it.
So what did you give me?
So I just gave you our market pasta, which, again, it's local farms grown spinach with a myriad of vegetables in our pappardelle pasta. Again, I think that this is going to – the Chardonnay is going to enhance the flavor, and I think that's kind of what Bill and I are trying to say today is, you know – you can use wine as a tool to enhance things, but it certainly there's no rule of thumb of what works with what.
This is a beautiful dish. This is, it smells great. I can't eat it until we get a call, though.
The day that we had the meeting to talk about the menu for today.
There was a meeting?
Yeah.
Well,
and
I'll be
Peter
impressed.
Came up with this concept of doing a vegetarian pasta dish as the main course after doing the meat dish as an appetizer. I nearly fell over in the face of this brilliant
concept. Why did that floor you?
Because traditional thinking, of course, is to go ahead and have your meat
dish
as your main course.
Yeah.
And turning it around like that, it was so fun and such an exciting twist that I got chills.
You're easily amused. Good for you. Let's
Thanks
go back
for taking that one.
Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Adrian in New Paltz. Adrian, you're on.
Hey, it's Matt Mann. Hi, Ray.
Hey, how are you?
Good. My favorite red wine, here it comes. It's big, it's strong, and it's late. It's Zinfandel.
Yep. A lot of people
and
don't
understand.
I would
understand. Like to have your experts comment on any particular... Yeah, there's that gnarly brand. I like that. But there's so many choices in the Zinfandel world. But, boy, I like Zin because it's got a little bit of a red heavy, and yet it's got some fruity, and you can serve it with a little ice. Or, actually, I like to take pineapple juice out of a can. I pour the pineapple juice into an ice cube tray, and I make ice cubes out of pineapple juice. Dump it in that Zinfandel for a cooler on the back porch.
You're a crazy man. Now I got to tell you, both of these guys visibly winced when you said you like to mix it with pineapple juice.
You may just have surpassed Bill as far as putting red wine in a freezer in a Ziploc bag. I think you may have the most shocking comment of the day so far.
No, the wine doesn't go in the freezer. The pineapple juice creates ice. I make ice cubes out of pineapple juice or orange juice or whatever, fruit juice, ice cubes. And that dumps into a nice mild red wine, and you sit on the back porch and you enjoy life.
You're a step away from sangria.
All right, man. Well, thank you for that one. 800-348-2551. The pasta dish is fantastic.
Thank you very much.
And it goes exquisitely well with this wine.
It does. They work so nicely together. And that's
really
why I said
nice.
They can complement, but it's enjoy whatever you like.
It's funny, the wine.
You're about to see what this red does with it. This red will be fine with it, even being a big red.
To me, that Chardonnay tasted sweeter after I ate some of the pasta dish.
They it's work an amazing well chemical it's like, reaction. It's like a couple dancing, you know?
Let's go back to the phones here, and then I'll take a swig of the red. 800-348-2551. Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Years ago, I was able, through good fortune, a friend of mine and I met a gentleman who was in his 70s and was living out of trust fund, and he had $180,000 a year income, and he liked to travel. So we went all over Europe with him. He was insecure about traveling by himself, and and his rule of thumb for wine tasting and for finding a good wine was A, look at what the natives are drinking with their meals and ask for the same. In Italy, that worked very well. And B, try to find a wine that's not too expensive and has the things that you like. And like a dry, if you want a dry white wine, then that you should have that with fish or whatever. But his watching the natives and seeing what they drank was often the best way, like with an eggplant parmesan or something, or you know, so I'd always say to the bartender, well, what do the people who come in on a regular basis, what do they usually have with this dish or that dish? And he would tell me, and that's what I would order.
Nice.
And fortunately, he lived long enough that I had 10 years to to develop a palate. And that's what the other part of it is well, you develop a palate of the things that you like and you don't like.
When in Rome, a great piece of advice.
It. I'll tell you that I find that Northern Italian wines are probably better than most of the French wines I've tried because they're less complex. They're just a fruity wine or a hearty wine without a lot of other things in it. American wines have still got a ways to go, I think, unless in California.
Washington has some. They have some good wine up in Washington.
Yes,
fabulous.
They do. I had a bottle of it.
Don't forget about Oregon. Excellent.
There you go.
Thank you.
It's excellent, but they can't produce it in the quantities that, you know, to ship it. But I've had some of the local wines and breweries too, up in Washington County. But you know, I thought his comment was well taken, though, is that you watch what the natives do.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, well, thanks for the call, and have a great weekend. We appreciate it. We're joined today by Bill Johnston, who is a wine importer with Tri-Vin Imports, and Peter Blackman of Veronica's Culinary Tavern in Altamont, New York. Peter, whatever this cheese is, it's really delicious. What is that?
It's a Cipollini Asiago. I just think it's just a wonderful wine with a big red.
And so
I think
the big red is what, Bill?
Well, this is Paxus, and actually one of the best-selling wines from Portugal right now in America. And it's a lighter style, but this is part of a trend coming out of Lisboa, which is the growing region right around Lisbon, which is the capital. And this is not influenced by the terroir. This is influenced by the people of the capital.
What do you mean?
Because they are well-educated. They're well-traveled. They come back. They say, look, they're doing these new world fleshy wines in California, and they're having a ball with it. Why can't we? And the answer is, of course, we can.
It's
Portugal.
Very tasty, and it goes very well with this. This Asiago is amazing stuff.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah. Wine and cheese, that's a good combo.
Go figure.
Let's go to Sharon in Schenectady. Sharon, you're on.
Hi there. I used to be a white wine drinker until I spent a little time in Northern California. I love dry red wine now, and I'm not a red meat eater at all. But I found a Finger Lakes wine. It's called White Ipecac. I've never heard of Ipecac. I don't know what that is, but it has a ginger bite to it. And, oh, my God, it was just, like, so amazing for, like, holiday times. I buy it as gifts.
Ipecac?
And I bet Ipecac. Ipecac? What is that?
Well, that's it's something that doctors use, and I'm not sure that... Okay, well, if it works for you, that's fine. All right, fair enough. Well, no, I guess these guys don't know anything about that.
I have not heard of that specific wine, but of course, here in New York State, in the Finger Lakes, they make some wonderful wines.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you very much for that call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number, and over to Becky in Delmar. Becky, you're on.
Hey, Ray, I'm really envious of how well you eat on Food Fridays.
Oh, it's good. It's good.
And I wish you'd bring home some leftovers and share it with the neighbors.
Well, not a bad idea.
Becky, we're closer to you in Delmar than we are in Albany.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to have to come out there.
Oh,
for
my gosh. This is my neighbor, Becky. Now I understand. Well, I can't bring any open bottles with me, but we're doing pretty good here.
I'm talking about the food.
The food's good.
I love sangria and have always enjoyed it, particularly in the summer on a hot day where I can down a couple of glasses without feeling a bad effect. And now it seems that I can't because it seems that everybody's adding hard liquor to sangria as well. When did that start?
Well, I agree with you. Family that I live with back in college days, they made a sangria and a tortilla de patat every Wednesday night. It was called tortilla de patat night. And they made sangria by taking a dry red wine, fruit, a big chunk of ice, and some club soda. And that's the recipe that I will always love and remember.
I'm going to take that from you.
Okay.
I think we... Generally, I've always made sangria with brandy and rum, and generally it started with when we decided to macerate the fruit, which basically we take the rum and we take the brandy and we soak the fruit, you know, for numerous days in it. And generally when we make our sangria, we start with a small ladle of that with the fruit. So it really doesn't tend to be a lot. Certainly if you came in and wanted just to grab a little bit of that fruit that has a little bit of that alcohol content in, and then just do the wine. Certainly that's something I think you could ask for anywhere. But it kind of in my world started with when we did the maceration of the fruit. And of course, little kick's never a bad thing.
Okay, because now I see recipes and it's calling for, you know, a lot more than just what you macerated the fruit in. They're adding.
Yeah.
And
well, That goes back to kind of our theme of the show today is, you know, do what you like. If you like the extra kick of the maceration of the fruit and a little bit of more alcohol in it, do so. If you don't, just do the fruit with the wine and some club soda, as Bill said, and you know, you'll have a little bit longevity on that one.
Hey, Becky, thanks, and we'll see you in the neighborhood.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551 is the number. Trey and Rhinebeck. Trey.
Hi guys, how you doing today?
Good.
Just a quick question. I'm a bartender here in Rhinebeck, and I'm taking the introductory sommelier course through the Court of Master Sommeliers in the fall here. Any quick tips? Any you know, words of wisdom for someone who knows a little bit about wine, but you know, is doing his studying and trying to you know, improve upon.
Yeah, first of all, congratulations. That's a great step. And I do have a recommendation for you. Think about the wines that you have had in the past that speak to you, or anything that you're enjoying now that kind of speaks to you, and then grab onto that region and jump online, buy a couple of books, and read all about that region. And then when you get somewhat saturated with that region, you're ready to move on and find another wine that speaks to you and go to that region. And you go region to region to region, and you're going to get very quickly familiar with how to study up on a particular area because you think in terms of region with wine.
All right, Trey, thank you very much. I guess our last wine of the program here. We only have a few minutes left. We'll get to another caller or two, but what is this one?
Well, we saved the best for last. This is our big boy. It's a very heavily extracted. It's aged 18 months.
What does that mean,
months.
Heavily extracted?
It means that in this particular case, they used double the skins compared to the amount of liquid, and they left it for a very long period of time in order to...
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand double the skins. What does that mean?
Well, what you do is you take skins that were already from another crushing and you add them to juice, so you have skins that were not from that particular crushing that are in the extraction, and there are many other, you know, high-tech techniques in the winemaking portion of the wine production to increase the concentration. And, you know, these were techniques that were started in Napa, and the rest of the world is now doing them. But once again, this
seems
wine,
like a strong wine.
Yeah. If this wine were from Napa, it would be $200.
You're kidding me.
No.
And this, Peter, you handed me some sort of a brownie. Really, you drink wine with dessert?
Of course. Those are two of the best things in life.
You're kidding me.
No, this is our chocolate flourless. Right. We call it a chocolate oat cake.
Okay, let me take a call so
please
I can
do.
Try a bite of this. This is from Hugh in Lake Luzerne. Hugh, you have about 30 seconds.
Hi, we were up in Quebec City on a wonderful vacation on the way home, getting close to Vermont border, a beautiful vineyard with an inn, and the chef owned the vineyard, and it was wonderful wine we had with our anniversary meal, and yet you cross the border in Vermont. Where's the Burlington and Plattsburgh vineyards? There aren't any.
Okay.
How can Quebec do it so well?
All right, that's a good final
care.
Question here. Bill.
Yes, I have a friend, actually, who's in the Finger Lakes who is doing the same sort of a thing. And one of the reasons that he is so motivated to make wine for his boutique restaurant is the limited availability of wine in Canada.
Now, there you go. Hey, quickly, Peter Blackman, how do we find out more about Veronica's? Are you guys on the web?
We are. Veronicastavern.com. All our stuff is there.
Veronicastavern.com. And Bill Johnston, expert job. How do we find out more about Trivin Imports?
Trivin.com.
Guys, great job. Thank you for the great preparation you did. Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, announcing Outdoor Market on River Street, featuring farm-fresh produce and handmade goods every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., TroyMarket.org. Electric City Food Co-op, sharing a vision to bring a community-owned grocery store, a grocery, to Schenectady, connecting local producers with local consumers. Membership online, electriccityfood.coop. And Warwick Valley Farmers Market, the 24th year of providing locally grown produce and farm-fresh food with 37 family farms and artisan kitchens and bakeries, open Sundays, warwickvalleyfarmersmarket.org. Well, thanks again to Bill Johnston and Peter Blackman for being with us today. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls today. Zach Malloy has been our engineer all week, did a great job. Dina Salzman took your calls. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be back in the big chair on Monday for a Medical Monday. Right now, though, stand by for news.